Okay, good afternoon, everyone. This is the September 3rd, 2019 Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. And we have for the record, we have a quorum. And we'll call the meeting to order. So first, we would like to have a moment of silence. And I would like to have you think of the poor souls that went down in the fishing boat off of Channel Islands this weekend. It was sad. It's very sad. Okay, with that, we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
My thank you. So with that, we would like to, if there are any announcements or presentations, this is the time for that. Does any of the members have any announcements? Staff, is there any presentations or announcement at this point? Okay, with that, we will open it up to the public. And this is for anything that's not necessarily on the agenda, but if you need to speak to an item on the agenda but have to leave early, this is a good time for that, too. And if you like, you can state your name for Gina.
Good afternoon. Bill Bowes. I'm a member of the City's Finance Advisory Committee. I'd like to pass the recommendation to the WAFCAC and to the city that the CFAC really should also be taking a look at this amendment to Amendment 1 before it's presented to the city for final approval or modification if that's appropriate.
Good evening. My name is Carolyn Brinkman, and I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I'm not sure if you read Mr. Casares' monthly budget report and progress report for the wharf that went before the City Council last week on its consent agenda. And I want to talk to you about a plan that Mr. Casares will soon be preparing for the California Coastal Commission. And the plan is retitled Recycled Water Management Plan. Much of what the CCC is requesting suggests that they have some questions about the city's plan for indirect reuse, their indirect reuse plan for potable water. Again, the recycled management plan is required by the Coastal Commission as a permit condition before construction begins on the wharf, and it's condition number 6. It's contained in a sentence that I would hate to diagram, but I'll try to break it down for you a little bit. At any rate, last Tuesday I did ask the City Council to request that the plan be brought back to the City Council for review because of its importance, and I think it should be brought back here as well. Mr. Casares responded later that it would be a short report and he would consider whether it should be brought back or not. So again, I'm asking for that to come back here and the City Council, and then to be on the Water Reclamation Facility website. And for one thing, the CC wants to know how the city will use the recycled water if potable reuse doesn't work. In other words, the plan for injecting it into the ground and pulling it back out so we can drink it. And here are the relevant parts from the California Coastal Commission. Overall, before construction begins on the wharf, the CCC wants to ensure, and I'm quoting here, ensure that the maximum amount of tertiary treated recycled water is produced and that the maximum amount of such water is used for beneficial reuse purposes. Also, the CC wants to see that the plan ensures that recycled water is, and I quote, injected underground in locations that will maximize ability for groundwater replenishment and indirect potable reuse, including over the long term and taking into account potential seawater, sea level rise and increased aquifer seawater intrusion. Also, the CCC wants to see backup plans for replacing, and I'm quoting here, replacing existing potable water use with recycled water use where feasible and appropriate, including with respect to both urban and agricultural reuse. That means show the CCC what the city will do if indirect potable water reuse doesn't work. Show the CCC the agricultural or urban reuse plans for how that recycled water will be used. Finally, the CCC states, in addition, and this is really important, the plan shall ensure that the sites designated for injection of treated wastewater are designed to maximize the long-term health and sustainability of groundwater and surface water and related resources, including wetlands, streams, creeks, lakes, riparian corridors, marshes, etc., as much as possible, including with respect to potential sea level rise and increased aquifer seawater intrusion. It seems to me that the council and WRFCAC and the residents really ought to see that plan to see how the city would reuse that water, and to see really how much the city thinks that that recycling plan works in terms of injecting the water into the aquifer. I don't think that's a short plan, by the way. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any other public comment? With that, not seeing any, I will close it to the public, but I would ask staff if they can answer the questions to both Bill Bowes and to Carolyn Brickman.
Sure. Regarding Mr. Bowes' question, we'll work with the city manager and the WRF subcommittee to determine the appropriate review committees for the contract amendments. Regarding Ms. Brickman's question or statement, there are the Coastal Commission issued a notice of intent to issue a permit. There are several things that we need to do. One of those is one that Ms. Brickman outlined, which is the reclaimed water feasibility. Much of that work has already been done with the reclaimed water feasibility study, which this board reviewed a year or so ago. Stereo? A year or so ago. The other components of it will be addressed in the GSI work that continues. So part of that was studied in their phase one report and will be continued as they do actual aquifer testing in the near future.
One of the things that she just read out of that special condition was about agricultural reuse. Will this water be of quality such it could be used for ag, or is it going to be too in salts?
The water for reuse that would be injected into the ground would vastly exceed the agricultural requirements. So it's going through an RO facility, so it would very much so exceed the quality requirements for ag reuse. There is no current plan for ag reuse. It's only the condition is only if it's determined infeasible for injection or reuse would we need to address reclamation through ag reuse. And that's reflected back on the city's local coastal plan, where the Coastal Commission in the current plan wants the number has left my head, but a certain amount of reclaimed water reuse in the next upgrade of a wastewater treatment facility with a requirement of the LCP.
May I ask a question here?
Hang on, just one. On this recycled water management plan, will it will suffice for the Division of Drinking Water and the Regional Board for what they need to do?
They'll probably have additional. Division of Drinking Water will have much more requirements for this. Coastal Commission just wants to know more feasibility. They don't need to know the construction details of the wells per se and the treatment system. They're more looking at a broader picture. Division of Drinking Water will get down to construction details when they do their review.
And when will that occur?
It's already started with Black & Veatch's 60% design work that's been transmitted to the state. Regional Board is not so much concerned with reclaimed water, but meeting our NPDES discharge requirements.
Jesse?
It's probably asked and answered, but just for my recollection, what sort of factors would constitute infeasibility of injection?
Travel time would be the biggest concern, that we're unable to meet the travel time required to, as required by the Division of Drinking Water. Now, the model shows that we exceed travel time, but Division of Drinking Water doesn't accept modeled results, so we need to actually do aquifer testing to prove it out.
Thank you.
While we're still on that subject, in that same condition, it talked about the maximizing long-term health and sustainability of groundwater. If over time we're injecting this water to get your log credits that you need, are we not also depositing or leaving in the ground the constituents that we're trying to remove, and over time there'll be a plume of that accumulating? And what will happen to that over time? It says long term.
Eric Caceres, the work program manager. It's kind of the exact opposite of that. So if you recall, the water quality in the Lower Moro groundwater basin is not extremely good as it relates to both TDS salinity, but more importantly, nitrates. And so the water that we're going to be putting into the ground is, as Rob mentioned, is going to go through reverse osmosis and take out the vast majority of the salinity. It's also going to go through a disinfection advanced oxidation process to further remove pathogens, and then it's going to go into the ground. So the water going into the ground is on par with drinking water quality. And so we're actually taking the water going into the ground is in much better quality than what's currently in the ground.
What is that detention time taking out that the plant can't take out? That's going to be left in the ground. Chemicals of emergency concerns, pharmaceuticals, pathogens, viruses, what's going to be left in the ground over time? Or is it just going to evaporate or disappear, or where is it? It seems to me that over time you keep putting this in so that you can pull it out at the wells, but over time, whatever it is you're taking out of that constituent, it's going to start to accumulate into that groundwater, is it not?
No, it's that those constituents are removed from that purified water that's going into the ground, and we do have a stream of water that still goes to the ocean. So the permeate, or the reject water from the reverse osmosis process, which is about 20% of that flow, is going to continue to go to the ocean. So that's taking out some of those constituents that we don't want to go into the ground. But essentially, Division of Drinking Water's requirements for that water when it's going into the ground are on par with drinking water standards. So it has to meet all the primary and secondary drinking water MCLs, and then it also needs to meet a very rigorous log removal standard, which is one of the other critical components for potable reuse.
I got a quick question regarding that. Could it be they're trying to remove the DO from the water that you have that's coming, that they're injecting into the well, and that's for the 4 months for basically to cut down the oxygen? It's not even that. Okay.
No. The reason that they want the 4 months is in case there's something catastrophic that would happen to the treatment process, that there's time to recover before we start withdrawing that water. So it's with the rules that are being looked at for direct potable reuse, there will likely never be a situation where you plumb the output of a wastewater plant into the input of a drinking water system. They'll want to have some sort of reservoir in between there so that there's time to react
Oh, okay.
Just in case something catastrophic does happen. It's the Division of Drinking Water is very much their kind of method of operation is these multiple barriers to, issues that could cause health issues. So, the treatment, the disinfection, the travel time are all these various things that can be done to, they're basically contingencies.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right, with that, we're going to move on to our next item, which is the consent calendar. Does the committee have any comments on consent?
I do believe we have a misspelling of Mr. Brennan's name in there, so we'll make that correction.
I'll second.
You have a motion to approve and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none. The motion passes. We'll go on to the next item, which is item B1, and I'll turn that over to staff.
We're going to take this in two parts. First will be the waterworks section. Mr. Caceres will present, then I'll go on to present the Corolla section.
Excuse me. Thanks, Rob.
I can see it.
Thanks. So, as Rob mentioned, for item B1 this afternoon, I took the liberty of shortening the title a little bit to make it fit on the slide, but it's essentially a review of a contract amendment for both Waterworks Engineers as well as Corolla for the Water Reclamation Facility Project. Again, the recommendation here is to provide comment and input on the presentation for the draft contract amendments for Waterworks, and then the same for the Corolla amendment as well. And as Rob mentioned, I'm going to start and review some of the specifics of the Waterworks amendment, and then he will take over and present on the proposed Corolla amendment. So first on the Waterworks amendment, why is an amendment needed? So there'll be a pretty much a fundamental difference between the two contract amendments that we're talking about here tonight, whereas the Waterworks was brought under contract in early 2018, didn't really anticipate a contract amendment would be needed for them based on the way that their contract was developed and the way that the project was developed. Now, the Corolla contract amendment that's going to come up a bit later is that was always planned to be amended on an annual basis. So why are we talking to you about a fairly sizable or very sizable contract amendment for Waterworks Engineers? So just a quick background for those that are watching that may not be familiar. Waterworks Engineers is the design firm that is designing the conveyance facilities portion of the project. So the what is now two pump stations and the network of pipelines that connects the existing wastewater treatment plant to the new water reclamation facility. So in general, we would be looking at a contract amendment for this design engineer for two reasons. One would be any delays in the project schedule, and have been some delays in the project schedule, and so I'll cover that one fairly quickly here. We've been talking to WERCAC and CFAC and City Council over the last several months about some delays we've had on the design and conveyance facilities portion of this project. And those delays have primarily been due to some issues in accessing some property owned by Vistra and PG&E. That's been an issue because we need to do some on-site field investigation work in order to finish the design of those facilities. So geotechnical engineering and survey. So those two items have been delayed, or getting those two items completed. And so it's delayed Waterworks and them being able to actually complete their design effort. So more time means more cost. They've been also helping, just helping shepherd that process along and helping us try to gain access to the Vistra and PG&E properties. We now have gained access to those properties to do the necessary field investigations. And the 60% design deliverable for them is forthcoming in the next several weeks. so we've got over that hurdle, but one part of their amendment does have to do with the initial project management for the extended project timeline for them. That's about $38,000, or about 5.5% of the total amendment that we're talking about for them. So not a big piece, but I did want to distinguish that component from the second component, which is the addition of out-of-scope work. So there's been some major work items that have been added to their scope of work, so I'll try to cover these in a couple of different groups. The first one is the second lift station and the redundant force main. So the discussion of these changes to the conveyance facilities project go all the way back to December of last year when Waterworks and Corollo made a presentation to WorkCap around the benefits of having a second lift station for operational reasons, as well as there's a cost benefit there, as well as adding a redundant force main, which was an improvement that was necessary to improve the operation of the overall system. So those two things were presented to WorkCap. They were then presented to City Council in January and the second City Council meeting in February, where the council took action on these two items. So those two items have been added to Waterworks' contract that weren't previously part of Waterworks' contract. The next item is a trenchless crossing of Willow Camp Creek. This has come up fairly recently, but based on some additional biological work that was done by Kevin Merck Associates, our biologist for the project, we identified some issues with the creek crossing on the bike path. And so we've had to change our method of construction there, and we're going with the trenchless construction to be able to avoid that jurisdictional waterway there. It takes us out of the need to go and get permits with the Army Corps of the Regional Board for those items. And so staff has made that decision to move forward with that revised construction method. So that's added a little bit of cost to their design. The Quintana water line, when the One Water Plan was completed back last year, one of the projects that was identified was some water line improvements in a section of Quintana, South Quintana, just before you get to South Bay Boulevard. Because we're going to have that portion of Quintana opened up for the installation of all the pipelines necessary to support the water reclamation facility, we thought it would be prudent at that point in time to do that water line replacement. And so that's a portion of the project that wasn't previously in their scope, but we made the decision to add it to their scope. The purified water line to the injection wells, this is also something that we've talked about a couple of times, in that this was formerly a part of another project component. So the water reclamation facility project is made up of three components: the actual facility itself on South Bay Boulevard, the conveyance facilities, the pipelines and pump stations, and then the injection wells. Back in when we developed the budget for the project last summer, the purified water line was part of that injection well project. But because all those pipelines are all running together, it made sense to include that as part of Waterworks' scope of work. And so now that purified water line has been moved over from one project component to another. So that's why that is in there. Communication conduit was added to carry fiber between the pump stations, as well as the existing wastewater treatment plant and the new water reclamation facility. So there's a little bit of additional cost in there for the design of those facilities. When we added the second lift station, we also took on the replacement of the force main from lift station 2. So that force main is being replaced. And then the last item is additional potholing. So as we've added some of these additional scope elements to Waterworks' contract, it's made things a little bit more complicated. For one, we've added another pipeline in that pipeline corridor that we're running through Quintana and other places. So we've added a significant amount of potholing or utility investigation to be able to identify the lateral location as well as the depth to a little bit higher degree of certainty in order to minimize the change orders or schedule delays that we might see during construction. So what you'll see in the staff report and in Waterworks engineer's actual fee estimate is a bit of a different breakdown of where these dollars are coming from. They're breaking it down based on their tasks that are in their current budget, which is the project management, they have the design of preliminary design, final design, i.e. the 60 and 90 and 100% designs. They have engineering services during construction. But when I sat down with them, and when the program management team reviewed and worked through their budget with them, we wanted to understand a little bit different way of looking at it, and a little bit better way of looking at it in this case. How are these different new design elements, how are those really impacting the budget? So we look at a total amendment value of about $692,000. Where is that coming from? As I mentioned, a small portion was coming from the project management, that's due to the construction, the schedule delays. But this is how the cost breakdown to the individual different components that we've added to their scope of work. And I'll highlight a couple of the larger ones that should jump out to folks and make a lot of sense there. One is the purified water pipeline. That's a $225,000 of the overall $692,000 estimate. So we're talking about adding thousands of feet of an additional pipeline to their existing scope of work. As I mentioned previously, we're taking that out of what will be the future recycled water facilities design contract and moving it over to Waterworks. So that's a big one to take a look at. The other one is the new Quintana water line. That's a fairly significant cost as well, about $94,000 of the total $692,000. And then the additional potholing of about $106,000. So those are three of the larger items that are attributing to the overall amendment. So budget impacts. So this budget amendment is in line with the rebaseline budget that was presented at the end of Q4 of this last fiscal year. So essentially at the end of the last fiscal year, that budget had been carrying a couple of different line items that are related to the $692,000 that we're talking about. One is we had anticipated about $500,000 amendment for Waterworks based on, as I mentioned, we identified a number of these changes to their scope back in the end of 2018, beginning of 2019. We also were carrying an additional potholing budget of about $150,000. So take those together, it's about $650,000. And then one of the items that Waterworks is also working on is they have assumed some of the geotechnical work that's helping identify or characterize the west injection area. So over in the Vistra property where we're looking at doing injection. So we had previously planned on using constructing a pilot well in that location or that side of Highway 1. With some of the things that we're doing and now working with Vistra, looking at using one of the Morro Bay Beach Water Company wells for essentially our pilot well, that's another $150,000 that we're potentially saving by doing this amendment with Waterworks. So that is the Waterworks amendment in a nutshell. If you have any questions, I could probably answer those before we move on to the Corolla amendment discussion.
Does anybody have any questions here,
Steve? Yes, I do. You know, I sat in on the interviews as well as Paul and Valerie, and I do remember what they were tasked to do. And it appears that is correct. They didn't have the second force main. They didn't have the lift station. And they didn't have the indirect potable reuse line coming back. My question right now, because I'm not 100% sure in all I hear on this, they're all in the same pipe corridor, correct?
That's correct.
I'm a little confused for the extra potholing, because usually when you go out and pothole, you're potholing that corridor, not, you know, and that's where I'm getting a little confused if you're throwing an extra pipeline in there. Because what bothers me isn't what they're asking for, it's the amount they're asking for. It's almost 51 or 52% of the original contract amount. And I'm this is what I did for a living all my life. And so, you know, when you're adding one or two lines in an existing corridor, the surveying's pretty much all done. You know, if you were saying, gee, they're jumping the freeway and having to run the indirect on the other side, okay, I could appreciate that. But it just seems like the amount seems high to me. Based on what I'm understanding the additional scope is, I didn't know about the trenchless. I thought there was times when they had talked about it originally, I thought, when we first hired them on. So that's why, in my mind, I'm a little confused there. But I'm sure there's a cost there. It's probably one of the more major costs in this thing. And I thought that actually was part of it, because I thought they knew there was real issues at the roundabout. And maybe that's not where the trenchless is happening, but those are my concerns,
sure.
Eric.
Sure. No, and those are good questions. So I'll try to move through those. So I'll hit on the. Maybe we'll talk about the trenchless crossings first.
Okay.
So the Waterworks was always tasked with doing a trenchless crossing reduce at Morro Creek. So Morro Creek is.
Oh, okay. So it's not the one at the roundabout.
We have the pipe bridge there, and then we have the actual trenchless construction that we're going to be doing at the roundabout. So those have always been in the project.
Oh, okay. Good deal.
We previously did not anticipate having any wetland or jurisdictional waterway issues with Little Camp Creek, which we subsequently identified. And so that's why we're going with the trenchless construction. We're adding a trenchless construction there, essentially to preserve project schedule and to avoid the need to go to Army Corps for a 404 permit and go to the Region Corps for a 401 permit.
Well, the only thing that I'd question is the potholing part of it. I don't understand, because you want to know where all the utilities are, regardless of the number of pipes you're running in the corridor, unless you're following a new alignment that they weren't originally set up to do. And that's, Eric, I'm not trying to make hay. I'm really not, because this is a business I did all my years. It just struck me when I first saw the numbers that it seemed high to the original contract to add some lines into where you're already putting in three or four lines running through there. And I think you answered most of it for me. The potholing, I don't know.
Back when they originally put together their contract, I want to say they only had like $20,000 potholing in there. It was really low. With the anticipation that there could be some additional potholing that would be done, and that would be picked up by maybe a different contract. So there was very little potholing.
Okay. In the original.
And then I will say that with the addition of the additional lines, in Quintana, and the decision to put all of those together, it wasn't necessarily a linear relationship within terms of the complexity of the construction. So we're dealing with and plus there's the coordination now with the Division of Drinking Water, so it changed things a little bit with the separation requirements between that, the portable reuse line and the other wastewater lines. So it's made the construction and the design, for that matter, significantly more complicated.
Okay.
And so that's really what's driving this additional need for the additional potholes, because the trench width got significantly larger.
Oh, okay.
Not just adding the additional pipeline, but as I mentioned, the new pipeline has to be in a separate parallel trench, if you will, to be able to maintain separation.
Correct.
Between the wastewater
And I was going to ask, the water line they're replacing, are you just going to abandon the old one in place and put in a new line, or is the intent to go back into the same location?
I believe it's replacement of that line, upsizing that line, which was one of the projects that was identified. I don't know if it was a fire flow issue, because the line was too
No, what, well, what I'm driving at is, are you ripping out the old line, putting in a new line in its location, or are you just abandoning the old one in place and putting in a new water line and making the lateral connections to?
I need to check and get back to you on that.
Oh, okay.
If we're removing that line and putting the new line in its place, but I think we
because people will be without water for a while if you're ripping out the old line.
And
you
go back and look at, and that will be detailed in the 60% design.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
Eric, just to clarify, Eric, the location that you're talking about in regards to Willow Camp Creek, and that's where drainage crosses underneath the road on Main Street at Quintana.
It's on the bike. It's on the bike
or
path.
Further
is where
up
we're
the
in,
bike path.
It's further up the bike path. Is where we're encountering it.
Mm-hmm.
I just had two clarification questions. So I understood that the purified water line at 225 is replacing a line item in a separate budget. So are we going to see an amendment for that that's parallel, or is there going to be a differential there?
So that work was always in a different design engineer's bucket. We haven't actually hired that design engineer yet. But when we do hire that design engineer, their scope would have been a couple thousand feet of purified water pipeline and probably four injection wells. Their scope will now just be for the four injection wells and not the pipeline.
So realistically, we can subtract the 225 from the 692 and kind of imagine it that way.
Yeah, that would have been that was always part of the budget because it was being carried as a placeholder for budget for the design of the recycled water facilities. Yeah.
So okay.
That's essentially being moved over.
And I'm wondering. I mean, I know you made that very clear to us, but I'm wondering if when we deliver this, if we it's a little more palatable to 692, but there's a And the other question I had was the trenchless crossing, is that for contractor, or I'm sorry, for design engineer convenience, or is that for city convenience?
That's really for the city and the overall project convenience. So again, the reason why we're doing that is we have a jurisdictional waterway. It was determined to be jurisdictional when we did some follow-up biological work by our biologist. Which means in order to do conventional construction through that area, we would have had to go get a permit from the Army Corps of Engineers, which is, you can pretty much call it a year, is how long that takes. We looked at all the options on the table, and as a group decided that it made sense to go with the trenchless construction. Nobody was going to be a little bit more in terms of cost that would be beneficial in terms of the schedule.
For sure. I guess where I was going with that is, I mean, is that a problem they should have foreseen? Is that a problem they should have been working on a year in advance if they'd known a year was the timeline? Because Army Corps of Engineers, they always take forever. The regional board, they always take forever. And, I'm wondering if we can come to it and, go away from it and hit that back, come back and hit that later. I mean, we know where they should land on both sides. So, and I'm kind of going off topic here, but I'm wondering if that's not something that they ought to have foreseen and maybe we shouldn't be on the hook for all of it. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if you'll know the answer to that question. Yeah. I guess this is my thought. So.
Well, the original, so they were, their contract was developed, timing a little bit and tie this back to the draft environmental document that was prepared. But the original environmental document did not pick up that waterway as being jurisdictional. So it wasn't until we came on board and started looking at some things and started to accelerate the design a little bit more that we identified that this looked like it was going to be an issue. And it was something that we picked up post the environmental document and something that we built into or brought into the addendum that we're doing.
So we had a flawed EIR, is that what I heard?
There's something that was not currently characterized there as being jurisdictional.
Okay.
On the staff report on page 4, discussion for the WWE contract amendment. The last bullet point there, one of the items that originally we were going to do was the trenchless crossing of State Highway 1. Was that the one down by the mortuary to cut across over to Teresa Drive?
That's correct. So originally we were going to be going with trenchless construction underneath that overpass.
Now that that's not being done, do we get any credit back for that being eliminated?
That is a good question. I need to just double check and look at that. I need to go back and look at their contract a little bit and see what goes into that. So there was some additional geotech and surveying work that needed to be done that we wouldn't get it. That we would still need to pay for, but the actual trading off one trenchless for another, that may be a potential area for reducing costs.
And why did we choose not to go that route?
After Waterworks got further into the design, they identified and looked at the as-built drawings for that overpass. They identified that they could go in that open-cut construction underneath there. And we also met with Caltrans, our local Caltrans representative, and spoke with them. And determined that it was feasible to do open cut construction in that area.
The Willow Camp Creek trenchless crossing that you now propose, which originally in the concept report was cost prohibitive, at least it alluded to that, but now you're saying you're avoiding it because you don't want to get a permit from the Army Corps of Engineers. And I don't understand why. I've gotten numerous permits from the Corps, going back to when, before the Ventura Field Office ever existed, straight from David Castanon in Los Angeles. I don't know, is it worth $1 million to avoid the Corps of Engineers? Spend $1 million in construction to avoid them? I don't know what the problem is. I mean, I can call Ventura today and ask. I can get the permit myself. I've done numerous permits myself for the Corps of Engineers. I got all the permits for the Chora Valley Pipeline. We even crossed flowing streams with an open trench. We put in cofferdams and diverted the stream. So I know it can be done.
Oh, no, absolutely. It definitely can be done. So since it wasn't previously anticipated, and we're just now completing the 60% design, which is essentially what we would need to take to the Army Corps of Engineers to get that permit, based on our conversations with both staff in Ventura and staff in D.C., it's pretty much a minimum year-long process from when we submit an application, which would be within the next couple of weeks when we receive the 60% design. So we wouldn't be able to go to bid on that project until September of next year, which doesn't work with our schedule.
I seem to recall in the EIR that that was identified as a wetland area in the biological report that was one of the appendices. It's pretty clear. It's in that that draft EIR. It was in there.
Okay, so I need to go back and look at the draft EIR.
Appendix E.
If it was determined as being jurisdictional, then the assumption was that we did not need a trenchless crossing there and we were going to be able to appoint it in some other way. But I just need to go back to the draft.
At that particular location, it's pretty tight. You're basically, I believe you're at that point in the state highway right-of-way, if not in the PG&E property, but you have a high voltage power line that runs down that fence line, and you have an existing city water line running down the bike path. So I don't know where you're going to actually do this alignment. Is it going to be in the state highway right away where you do the trenchless crossing underneath Willow Camp Creek?
It's in the PG&E property.
It's in the PG&E property.
Correct.
That puts you further into the wetland. How are you going to avoid that wetland with this?
We're going under the wetland.
But from where to where? I mean, at some point or another, you're going to have to get further enough away to start your equipment to go underneath. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, because the wetland is the nature of being high groundwater surfacing at that location, you're going to have a trench that's, what, is 8 feet deep, that you're going to encounter that high groundwater, which is another core permit. That's a nationwide 33 permit.
Yes.
So in other words, it seems to me that you're not going to avoid the Corps of Engineers because you have the ocean outfall, which requires a permit from the Corps. You have dewatering that's required by the Corps. And you're just trying to avoid the one item, but the Corps still may apply to this. And do they not also need to take instructions from the US EPA as lead federal agency? They will tell the Corps what to do or not to do?
No, they consult with the Corps.
I mean, the US EPA, their lead federal agency, they're still developing their environmental determination. They'll do consultation with the US Fish and Wildlife Service, National Marine Fisheries Advisory Council, Historic Preservation, and the Army Corps of Engineers. And so they will still have to consult with the Corps of Engineers at some point in the game. Do we know when that will be?
That's correct. That consultation is already ongoing. We've already received a letter from the Army Corps of Engineers regarding the jurisdiction and the impacts to the drainage that's adjacent to the water reclamation facility. We have a letter from them that says that we do not need a permit from them for that work. We've also provided them the information necessary for them to make that determination for both Morrow Creek as well as Willow Camp Creek for both of these crossings. So we've been in communication with the folks at the Army Corps of Engineers. We just within the last week or so sent them some additional design details that they needed to make that determination. And so those design details included some specifics on the actual launching and receiving pits for the trenchless crossing, where those were exactly going to be located. So we are in the middle of that consultation with them and working towards them very soon making the determination that, yes, it is jurisdictional. They've already indicated that they agree with the recommendations from Kevin Burke that it is a jurisdictional waterway and they would have jurisdiction. And they've preliminarily told us that based on what we think you're trying to do, what you're telling us you're trying to do, we don't think you're going to need a permit, but we need to see some additional details. And so those additional details are what it's in the 60% design submittal. The design engineer rushed those a couple of weeks ahead of the completion of the remainder of the 60% design, but those details are there.
Does the US EPA concur with their assessment of this, of what the Corps is doing?
Yes.
Do we have any documentation to that effect? Any written letter from the US EPA about the Army Corps of Engineers correspondence?
The EPA, I do not believe we have, I don't know if I have written documentation back from the US EPA that concurs, but they do have the letter that was provided to us by the US, by the Army Corps regarding the finding of not needing, we don't need a permit for the drainage adjacent to the water reclamation facility. They have that letter. They are waiting on the letter from the Army Corps that says that we don't need a permit for the other two crossings.
Do we need a permit for the work that's going on in the ocean outfall with the Corps?
The Corps will have jurisdiction when we initiate that outfall work, yes.
So we're going to get a Corps permit anyways.
We absolutely will when we initiate the work on the ocean outfall. The only problem is that that work is not on the critical path for the project. So the important thing to think about is we are on we're on a timeline with the construction of the water reclamation facility. So it's somewhat independent of the construction of the conveyance facilities until we get to that point in early 2022 when we need to begin start up the testing of the water reclamation facility and we need to get raw sewage to it. And so that's one of the consideration for doing this was not necessarily that we didn't want to get a permit from the Army Corps of Engineers. The issue was that we don't have the room in our schedule to accommodate the 12 months that it would take to get that Army Corps permit and still be able to meet the schedule on the back end of completion of construction of the water reclamation facility.
You alluded to that there's a lot of the activities that must be done prior to the issuance of the CDP, so we obviously don't have the permit in hand, correct?
We don't. There's three requirements that we've got. There are three different requirements that we need to meet in order to, one, receive the CDP and then to start the construction process. And I can't remember which ones fall into which category, but essentially you can think of it as there's three things that we need to produce and give to them before we actually can start construction. That is what they can call their final plans and specifications, which is a little bit different for a project of this nature because it's a design-build project. We won't have 100% plans and specifications done before we start the construction activities. But they have given us in the NOI, there's a recipe of what they want to see in this package that we're giving them for the quote-unquote final plans and specifications. They also have a construction plan, which has some additional details on construction methods for other parts of the project, and then they have the recycled water management plan that was mentioned previously.
It seems in reading some of these tasks that you're asking the waterworks engineers to do are some of those elements that need to be done prior to the issuance of the permit. So be able to satisfy all these tasks in time to get the permit to start construction by when? When are we starting construction?
We're starting construction. The plan is to start construction in October based on our current schedule. So these things we're currently working on. So we are currently working on these final plans and specifications package. We're currently working on the recycled water management plan, and we're currently working on the construction plan. As I mentioned, we don't necessarily need 100% plans and specifications in order to get this moving. The Coastal Commission understands that there's three distinct projects. Each of them has kind of their own separate timeline. So in our discussions with them, we've identified that we are going to present something that would allow us to start construction on the water reclamation facility. But that before we started construction on the conveyance facilities or we started construction on the recycled water facilities, we would bring them separate deliverables for them to review.
Another item we're asking Waterworks to do is to support in obtaining the easements for the project.
That's correct.
And it seems to me that is another issue in the coastal development permit, that you needed permission before you issued the permit that you have landowner permission at all these locations. I think the right-of-way map that Praxis did back in May had 12 properties. Do we have permission from all those properties and have given evidence, as it's called, to the executive director of the Coastal Commission that we can proceed with all these lands?
Similar situation as the final plans and specifications. We're working on securing the property and the easements necessary to start construction of the water reclamation facility. So it's a bit of a stepwise process. We'll have the land purchased and the easements acquired for the water reclamation facility before we start the construction on that facility. We will have all the easements in hand or all the property acquisition issues taken care of before we start construction on the conveyance facilities, and such will be the case for the recycled water facilities as well.
Now, you already said that you already had some difficulties and delays with Vista and PG&E. Will they still be a problem as we proceed with obtaining easements? Are they on board? Are they causing a little bit of grief with that?
I believe the issue with the Vista property was just that they weren't familiar with the project. They haven't been involved, or they haven't been in the community long enough to understand some of the backstory and history of this. And so that when we approached them 4 or 5 months ago and said, "Hey, we need to get on your property to do some surveying, to do some geotech," they were a little bit surprised by that because they weren't aware of the project. And we had a whole so there was some negotiation that went back and forth, and then there was a host of different things that we had to do in order to get permission to go on the site. So that's where some of these issues have been in terms of the easement acquisition. We're working through that process now, but we do have some time. Obviously, it's we're working forward as quickly as we can, but we're not anticipating starting construction of these facilities until the summer of next year. So we are working on that now.
One of those other, I guess, properties would be Caltrans. And it's my understanding in reading their Project Development Procedure Manual, Chapter 17, Article 4, it says new utilities are not allowed to be installed longitudinally within the access control of freeways, which that is. How are we going to overcome that little problem?
That's a good question. And to tell you the truth, that wasn't necessarily on our radar until we met with the local Caltrans representative who opened up the possibility of doing construction in the approach lane. So that was where that came from. That was actually something that we broached with Caltrans and was something that they were amenable to.
Does that require some sort of statement from headquarters on that issue?
Only for construction of over $1 million in the state right-of-way does it need to go to headquarters. If it's less than $1 million, it's District 5 has authority to, through the permits section, to grant that permit.
Now, because of that, and because there's another item here about traffic control, and it was never identified in the EIR, it was certainly not identified in the addendum that just came out, there may be ramp closures, which would cause detours, and there's impacts because of that. And I'm not seeing any environmental document that covers that base. In other words, if we have to say you're coming home from San Luis Obispo and get off at South Bay Boulevard, and you can't, you have to go to Morro Bay Boulevard. You drive down Piney Way to the state park to get onto South Bay Boulevard. There's as much as 15,000 cars a day on South Bay Boulevard. You will destroy the pavement on State Park Road. Why are those impacts not identified in the EIR addendum? Because it's different. When the EIR came out, they did not anticipate ramp closures. And the traffic report that was done by the engineer up in Cayucas did not model any of those. Now that has happened, is Caltrans aware there may be ramp closures and it's going to affect a whole bunch of other things in neighborhoods and whatnot? And has that been proposed to Caltrans?
That's something that will be discussed at council when we bring the EIR agenda to council. I wasn't prepared to discuss the EIR agenda specifics.
But can you see the impacts it can cause by rerouting traffic onto the city streets and the state park road?
I need to go back to the environmental consultant. I prepared that document to get
specifics?
Well, when they did it and they made the proposal to do the EIR addendum, they specifically said in the proposal they weren't going to do another traffic study. But it's changed. The modeling's all changed. The queuing on the off-ramps, everything is completely different than the report that was done in the EIR. It seems to me that we have kind of glossed over the impacts to traffic, which is going to be monumental, especially for those parts in the state highway.
Yeah, and that's, again, that's something that we can address. I need to talk to the environmental consultant about the specifics there.
What I'd like to do is, before we go on to the next item in this section, is maybe open up to the public, if just so that we can hear if anybody's interested in that. So I'm going to open to the public right now for this item that we're talking about, and what's the amendment to the waterworks engineers, which is your pump stations and pipeline part of the project. If anybody would from the public like to get up and talk. He's seeing none. We'll bring it back to the staff for the second part.
Thank you. We'll go on to the Crowell amendment. As Mr. Caceres mentioned, it's a little different set of circumstances than the waterworks engineers. It is anticipated that we will be doing an amendment to the Corolla contract periodically through completion of construction, adding in the various phases of work on generally a fiscal year basis. We issued that original contract to Corolla back in April of 2018. Where the phase one was regarding the certification of the EIR, completion of the Prop 218 process, the EPA WIFIA application, and selection of a preferred design build team and award of that design build team. We were looking at an overall assessment of the work program, which when Corolla was originally brought on board, there was some thought of a co-teaming of MKN and Corolla at that time. Since that time, that was not determined to be necessary since MKN stepped away from the project. Reviewing of the design build proposals, negotiations, development of our program management information system, and regular updates to the council, city manager, and community. We moved on to Amendment 1 in November of 2018, continued oversight of the project, reviewed deliverables, development of the Clean Water State Revolving Fund application, looking at the applications for Division of Drinking Water for the injection components, coordination with the EPA regarding the WIFIA and finalizing that loan agreement. Also the same with the State Board for the SRF application, permitting lead for the Coastal Commission permit, and developing the Title 22 engineering report, and looking at revising the communications outreach plan that focused on the rate increase. And they led the development of the addendum to the EIR. The original contract was $292,000. Amendment 1 was $1.6 million, and Amendment 2 that we're looking at today, $2.34 million, for a total so far of $4.3 million in total contract as of today, or as of when council approves it. Future amendments, we'll have another one towards the end of this fiscal year, beginning of next fiscal year, focusing on construction management, and then updating those program management and construction management as we move forward with construction. Already gone over these items regarding services. This is for new services. Again, construction support, development of our alcohol management plan, which we talked about a little bit earlier with the Army Corps requirements for permitting of that work. Again, updates to City Council, WERFCAC, and the community, CPAC, budget and schedule management, design of the recycled water facilities, preliminary design that will be turned over to design engineer, design support for the conveyance system and WERF facility, public outreach, land use and potable reuse permitting, and funding support with our funding partners, EPA, the State Board, and Bureau of Reclamation for Title IX. And then also the internal management of their own project management team. Expenditures through July, at the end of this last fiscal year, were $1.3 million. This will leave, after this current amendment, about $3 million. Anticipated need for 2019-2020 is $2.4 million. We anticipate $600,000 when we get to the end of this fiscal year. And the budget remaining through the end of the project is $3.8 million, which is roughly in line, a little bit less than the anticipated $7.5 million for total program management costs to get us through this project. This amendment is reflected of what is currently contained in the city's fiscal year 1920 base re-baseline budget. So this amendment was anticipated, and happy to answer any questions regarding this contract amendment.
Steve, you want to go?
Sure. First of all, as with Waterworks Engineering, I think the three of us sat on when Crowlo Engineering was hired on. And I don't have too much problems with what's going on here because it was anticipated. And I think at the time you took over from Mike Nunley with MKN Engineering, and the idea was to parcel it out as you go. And so from that standpoint, you're staying within budget as best I could tell reading the numbers. So I don't have a problem with what's going on here.
I have one question going back to the special conditions for the coastal development permit, and that is for the ocean outfall plan that you're going to be developing. Are we building a new ocean outfall, or are we using existing?
We'll be using the existing outfall. We're going to have to modify the diffusers on that outfall, likely do some cleaning, and we're assessing the condition, overall condition of the outfall, so the integrity of the lining and the cathodic protection.
So I'm sorry I don't know this, but I'm assuming then that Cayuga is building a separate outfall, or are they using the same outfall?
I believe they have plans to construct a separate outfall using maybe not the actual conduits, but at least the right-of-way for those conduits at the Chevron, where the old Chevron pier was.
Okay, so further north.
Although they don't have a coastal development permit for that, and they still have rights to the jointly owned outfall off of Morro Bay.
Okay, so they're in construction and they don't have their permit for their outfall. What I'm wondering is if what if they don't get, if Coastal says no, we can continue to use the one in Morro Bay, would they then be on the hook to actually put some money into this assessment plan, the cost of doing this plan? Potentially, I'm just wondering.
Joint Powers Agreement with Cayucas does anticipate work on that outfall and a cost sharing agreement. I think the two boards really need to meet and discuss what that whose share, who, what portions each side shares in.
Jesse?
So I haven't been on this board as long as the rest of the distinguished members here. So just a couple questions. As I understand it, we're on budget for the Corolla. I mean, that sounds like, I mean, from everything I heard, this is standard operating procedure. This is what we expected.
This is what we expected. Maybe it's there's been a few delays with the project, so they haven't burned through the project as maybe as quickly as we anticipated last year. So, but we're within the budgetary constraints. We're actually less than what the budget originally was anticipated.
And you would anticipate that continuing, and it would be on budget throughout the duration of the project. As it, I mean, barring any unforeseen.
Barring any unforeseen circumstances, yes.
Oh, good. Thanks. That's all I have.
On the previous item with Waterworks Engineering, Task 1 was project management, but in essence, that's what Corolla's done. How many project managers do we have, and why do we have separate project managers? Why can't it be consolidated into just one?
That's the project management that they've got for the management of their own internal team and budget and those types of things. So they have their own. They have their staff that they're managing. They have the invoices that they need to develop to come to us to review. They've got their own subcontractors that are directly contracted with them that they have to oversee. Now, we oversee the activities of everyone, but they do have some amount of internal management that they have, and as do we. I mean, we are serving as the program manager for all of these, but we have a separate line item where we have to actually manage our internal budget, our internal staff, develop invoices that come to the city like any other professional services contract.
In the staff report, there's two items. There's that you've helped with the submission of a complete U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the WIFI loan. But yet there is an outstanding EIR addendum. Won't they need that? Have they deemed it complete? Do they have everything that they need, the EPA? I mean, so have we completed all that's needed with them?
The EIR is addendum is what we're doing for the SRF process. The environmental under EPA has taken a different course. We're using the federal requirements, so they don't need the EIR addendum. They're using some of the technical studies to complete their own environmental review, but it's not the EIR addendum per se. So we had a complete application, and then they take over as lead on the environmental process.
But the EIR addendum is showing the changes that have been made since we certified the final EIR last August. How do they know that we've made these changes if we don't give them the addendum to do their NEPA document? They need to know. Their NEPA document has to reflect what we're presently conceiving to do right
absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Yeah, so they have the EIR addendum, that they do have that, and we've been in constant contact with the folks in the EPA since, I'd say, before the first of the year on any changes to the project. So they have been up to speed. They're finishing their technical review now, but they're fully aware of the project and where it currently sits and any changes that have been made since that application was completed.
What kind of environmental determination do we anticipate from them? That's either a finding of no significant impact in FONSI or an environmental impact statement, EIS. What do we expect to get from them?
Well, I wish I had my environmental consultant here to answer that question, but I believe we're covered under the programmatic NEPA document the WIFIA program has done. And I may be speaking out of school a little bit there, but that environmental process has been going on for the last, essentially before the first of the year in our coordination with them and the consultations and everything else. And I can get you the specifics on exactly the exact determination,
But I don't have that off the top of my head right now.
Well, it seems that since our EIR identified the Class 1 environmental impacts to cultural resources, that it would be hard-pressed for the Environmental Protection Agency to find a finding of no significant impact, FONSI. So it looks to me we may be going the route of an EIS. Now, we had an EIS on the Chorro Valley Pipeline. I know what that's like. I would anticipate that you probably would be faced with the same thing.
Yeah, and I can give you an answer to that. I apologize that I don't have the environmental consultant here to answer some of those specifics as it relates to the environmental document that was done, the CEQA Plus requirements that we're subject to on the SRF side, and then the NEPA requirements that we're subject to on the federal side.
Now, under your task 6.1, it talks about project update meetings. And I've asked this before, are there any meeting notes taken during that time? Do we have documentation of what has occurred in these update meetings that are, I guess, held internally?
I don't believe we don't have meeting minutes. These are internal meetings between Corolla, other members of the program team, and city staff typically. We don't currently produce meeting minutes from those meetings.
One of the other things, because I don't expect to find something like this maybe on the Morro Bay WRF website, but under meetings and documents, the last thing other than what you have on the very first page, you go to those, there hasn't been any updates as far as anything since July of 2018. It's just been like silent for, and I know there's been a lot of activity with this project, but it's not found there. So if, for instance, the EPA wanted to look up something and checked on that website, it would be empty. How are we going to keep that going month to month on that component?
We've been in a little bit of a holding pattern on the website development. We've had our focus on some other items, that is one of the things that's included in this amendment is Katz & Associates, who's a sub-consultant to Corolla, as a member of the program team, is going to be kind of revamping that website, and will be so the face of the website will change a lot, the content of the website will change a lot, and we'll be kind of actively managing that. We've really been just using the hot topics area there, and we've updated the FAQs. But we've been using that as the way to get out new documentation to the public through the website.
Valerie brought up this issue about the ocean outfall. When is that activity going to occur?
We would like to get that activity taken care of right away. So Rob mentioned a couple of very important elements of the ocean outfall, one being looking at the condition and looking at the looking at the condition and then also looking at the diffusers. One of the things that we want to look at as well is the actual the nature of the discharge is going to change fairly significantly. And I believe a good point was made earlier is, you know, current outfall is used by both Morro Bay and Cayucas. So now if Cayucas goes out of the outfall and then Morro Bay is discharging during times of the year only brine, what does that look like from a mixing standpoint and how the diffusers are oriented and everything else? So we're going to be looking at scenarios in that outfall management plan, both with and without the contribution from Cayucas, both with and without the operation of the portable reuse facilities. And so we're going to be looking at a number of different things there, not only looking at condition, but also just looking at how that outfall is operated in the future, if it's operated a little bit differently. So those are all the important things that will be answered there. We would like to get started on that work as soon as possible. One of the things that is required as part of the outfall management plan, we have to develop an outfall assessment plan that needs to precede some of the field work that we can do on the outfall. That's one of the conditions that the Coastal Commission identified in the NOI.
If Cayucas continues to want to use that outfall, they're obviously going to have to replumb their stuff down there, because right now they're plumbed right into the plant. Somehow they're going to have to rearrange their plumbing into the outfall. Do we have any idea how that might be? Because we're going to do some rearrangements down there too ourselves.
We met with Cayucas probably going on about a year ago to talk about how that might happen. And I think they would propose to use their existing line coming in and convert that into a outfall line, go into a small pump station to pump to the air release structure.
Oh, okay.
And combine the flow there at the air release structure.
They can't gravity into that line?
They can't gravity into that line.
So the that structure will remain?
Likely that structure in some form will remain. I'm not sure it will look exactly the same when we get done with it, but that tall structure near Atascadero Road, about the middle of the plant, with the half moon cut out on the wood paneling there will likely remain.
Now, reading the coastal development permit, they expect that to be gone. So how are we going to pull that off?
They expect a lot of things to be gone. I'm not sure that we have not prepared the details of our demolition plan to submit to them. So there has to be an outfall structure there to tie into the outfall for air relief.
Right, right.
So we'll be developing that plan with Coastal Commission.
Have you signed your part of the permit and sent it to the executive director as required?
Yes.
You accepted all the terms in the
yes.
permit? Stormwater and drainage, did you read that part?
Yes.
85th percentile, 24-hour event? Sounds more like a traffic study than... I don't know where that came from.
It's the same as our... we have some local regulations.
Right.
And we will be meeting those requirements. There is a section on technical feasibility. This site for the work is sitting on top of basically rock.
Mm-hmm.
We're not infiltrating into rock.
Right. So you'll put in a retardation basin, something that outlet a two-year traditional storm? That's the kind of conditions I would normally would see it, like at the county or the city.
Yeah.
The city adopted the county's reg, so, I mean, it's no different.
Yeah, they're the same.
Yeah, they're the same thing. So I don't know where this 85 percentile, that seems kind of odd to me.
It's for a lot of areas, it does work if you have infiltratable soils, so maybe a soil AB, some of the C soil types, hydrologic soil types. That condition works. It's a fairly low-intensity storm that they're talking about. So it's the basically, you know, kind of an average condition infiltration rate. We don't even have the luxury of doing that there. So we're relying on biofiltration through the detention ponds to achieve an equivalent treatment methodology.
So how are you going to size the ponds for any even this anticipated event? What are your calculations? I'd like to see them.
Okay. we will be getting the drainage report from Black and Beach soon.
Okay. All right. With that, I'd like to open up. Oh, do you have another item? Go ahead.
Yeah. Can I go back to agriculture? And
sure.
And use of the water for agriculture. I know that early on in the project, we were trying to figure out what we were going to do with the water in regards to local beneficial uses, whether or not we were going to try to reclaim it and indirect potable reuse, as well as providing water for our agricultural community. And it didn't really pencil out in regards to piping water out to the different farms and things like that. Now, I know in Los Osos, I believe that the Coastal Commission has a requirement for a certain percentage of the water from their plant should be made available to the local farmers. But is it on their dime? I believe it's on their dime. I don't believe the community is paying to transport that water to those fields. And I would ask that question, too. Should we provide water for our local agricultural community? Is it on their dime or our dime? Because that was one of the issues and one of the concerns when we were originally exploring this. Getting the water out to the agricultural community was actually more expensive.
I don't know the details of the Los Osos water agreements with the local agriculture community.
But I'm just saying the coastal put the same condition on there as well.
I would go back to, you know, what the goals of the project are is to provide a water supply that benefits the city of Morro Bay. Water supply, and that was determined to be indirect potable reuse. When we did look at agricultural reuse, there was quite a range of costs depending on the level of treatment, how far you were out, how many users we had. I think, you know, one of the reports, it ranged from, you know, 1,000 to 25,000 an acre foot, you know. But even at the lower end, from my recollection, the ag community was unwilling to pay more than what it cost them to pump out of their wells. At this point in time, that doesn't seem to make, from a beneficial use standpoint for the city of Morro Bay, the best use of that water resource.
Well, I guess when you're going back and you're addressing this particular concern that was raised by the Coastal Commission, that we go back and you provide that information as part of your discussions.
Well, I think that condition, especially in working with Coastal staff in development of the actual application, I think that was a pretty standard provision that they include, or standard condition that they were including there. So I think the interpretation of it is a little bit different for a project that's already going to be taking wastewater and putting it to its absolute highest and best use. That requirement does not necessarily read that way. But as Rob mentioned previously, the way that we are addressing this recycled water management plan is we're not reinventing the wheel. We're not doing a lot of new work. We're going back to the findings of the recycled water management plan that was developed per the state's requirements, and we're going to say, well, we're not going to be providing water for the ag community because we did an analysis and we determined that it was more cost-effective to provide water for potable reuse, and it didn't, and ag reuse didn't provide the potable water offset or the potable water supply benefit that potable reuse did. Now we've already done the feasibility study. We know that it's feasible to use this water, and so there really is no intention of turning back and supplying water for ag. I think that really that ship has sailed, and we're going to immortalize that in the recycled water management plan and essentially say, yeah, we are putting the water that we're producing from this facility to the highest and best use because it has the biggest water supply benefit for the citizens of Morro Bay. So that report will read, or that plan will read a little bit differently from somebody who may not know, or a project that's getting conditioned with this that may not have a recycled water component, or may not know exactly what they're going to do with the recycled water. That's where I think the city is in a very different place maybe than from somebody else that's going to be getting the coastal development permit.
Any other questions? Okay, with this part, I'd like to open it up to the public in case anybody would like to come up and speak about this amendment to Corolla's contract. Bill?
Yeah, Bill Bowes, again, a resident of Morro Bay and member of the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee. Only got to look at this a couple of days ago when the agenda came out. It's a little confusing to me. We had an original contract with Corolla, Amendment 1, was for phase two, had a not to exceed of $2 million, and the plan was to complete that by 31 December of 2019. Burbage in the amendment said, yeah, it could continue beyond that out to 2022. Now we have an amendment two. Well, let me back up. Amendment one also said, you know, the NTE for phase two is $2 million. Phase three was estimated to cost $5.3 million. And so now we have an amendment two that is $2.34 million, which covers part of phase two, the initiation of phase three. The numbers all probably make sense, but then there's a big change here where I heard comments that the plan is every year we're going to submit another amendment, which I think the original plan that the council approved was a good one, that had an amendment that said phase two was $2 million, not to exceed, and then city staff could go ahead and they had up to 10% additional cost if that could be demonstrated. And phase three would be amendment two, which was estimated to be 5.3. It would be nice to see that consistency maintained. I don't know why there's this change. I mean, I can surmise if I were Corolla, I would like to submit a new one every year and put just constantly adjust, and there's no risk to me that way. And it looks like we're on a path right now of having a time and materials contract with no end, and the incentive is just to keep it going as long as possible and get as much time and materials funding as possible. I know that's not the intent, but certainly it would be nice to see some incentive to control cost or even reduce cost. You know, one of the things CFAC ended up doing was we reduced our meetings with the finance advisor to look at WRF reports to only quarterly. You know, certainly we don't need to have the Corolla team come down on a monthly basis, which they probably are still doing, but I don't know if that happened this last month when they presented the monthly report to City Council. But there really should be an incentive for Corolla to find ways of taking cost out. Here, Waterworks Engineering, we saw a 51% increase. Yes, there's an offset, but yet, I mean, we should be finding ways to find ways to save money, and Corolla should be incentivized to do that. I know they're certainly incentivized to finish the project and do it well, and that's a big challenge, and I think we have a very capable team being led by Eric. But before the council gets presented this amendment too, I think there needs to be some effort to understand why we didn't just stay on the amendment one path, which we had a not to exceed. And now we're just kind of blowing by that, and we're saying, well, now phase two is another $2.34 million, but we're throwing a little bit of phase three in there. So anyway, it just needs a little more review before the city council should be asked to approve it. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
I guess, Erica, do you feel that the amendment requests are occurring at the appropriate milestones in the project? That would be my question. It's not just out of blue, but this is the appropriate time period to be asking for these funds because you're moving into the next phase.
I think in going back to the original agreement, and I'm looking at the amendment, but the original agreement is pretty clear in that it says that the staff shall conduct a review once every 12 months or less for each review of the city manager. Shall determine any changes or additions needed to the scope of work and provide budgetary estimates to be included with the city's budgeting process for each applicable fiscal year. So it was anticipated when we started this that there were a couple of things. One is when we originally brought on board, we fought very hard to not negotiate and develop a contract for the duration of the program right away. We thought it was appropriate to and working with Rob and the city manager on this, we thought it was appropriate to have some initial small amount of funds to be able to get things started and to be able to tackle some of the things that needed to be done in the first 6 months, roughly, or getting us to the end of fiscal year, or excuse me, the end of calendar year 2018 was the idea there. And then when we looked at amendment number one, there are some elements of amendment number one that cover just the fiscal year. There are some that go out further for phase two that go out further than the fiscal year, and it made sense to fund those things further out. I can take a look at the way that the phase two and phase three was presented in this amendment and change it a little bit so it's a little bit easier to be able to track the costs that are going towards phase two and towards phase three. I think right now it's maybe a little bit it's a little bit misleading in that there's a lot of stuff in there for phase two. And there's some of that is actually kind of phase three money, some of the controls work that we're doing, and some other things kind of go into phase three. There are some out-of-scope items that we didn't necessarily anticipate either. So the outflow management plan was something that wasn't necessarily anticipated. Some of these other items that were added weren't necessarily anticipated either. So we can identify which of those were anticipated and maybe which of those were not anticipated when we developed it. I still think that
it makes sense to do this on a fiscal year rather than looking at the phased, because the phased includes items related to the recycled water facilities and even management, construction management for the recycled water facilities that haven't even been designed yet. So if we were just to negotiate something for phase three right now, that would include the recycled water facilities which haven't been designed, so we can't necessarily identify what the scope and level of effort for that work would be, because it's for management of construction for things that haven't yet been completed.
I think sometimes when we see the word amendment, we think it's something that's unanticipated or extra or something, as opposed to the process that we adopted for the initiation and signing of your contract.
It's still open to the public if anybody else wants to get up and speak. If not, I'll close it to the public and bring it back. On these amendments, as I recall in the rate study, there was a certain amount allocated for construction management, which you'll be doing. And I believe that amount was for $2.5 million in the rate study.
Yeah, I believe the construction oversight component of the water reclamation facility itself is $2.5 million. Yeah.
And that would be a future amendment in the
Part of that is included here.
It so is. It is.
Roughly $750,000 of this amendment is devoted to roughly the first 10 months. It's the remainder of this fiscal
okay.
year in construction.
All right. Thank you.
I'd like to second what Jesse mentioned earlier, that when you go to council, that you make it really clear, particularly after listening to the comment, that in regards to waterworks, and that things were added, basically things were added onto their work, and things that you thought were going to go to another consultant, you would hire somebody else to do a certain body of work, you then gave to put it on the waterworks contract. And secondly, when you originally negotiated with Waterworks, some of those pipelines that are now showing up on this amendment were not included. And we asked that question then, why aren't we including these? So now they're here, and now that accounts for a big chunk of the cost, as well as work that would have been accomplished by others. And I think it's really important that you make that clear to the council and to the community. And it's just not something that's fabricated out of the air.
Okay, with that, the recommendation for this item was that we provide comments and inputs as it goes. I guess it's going to go before the city council, so if anybody would like to add any additional comments at this point, committee members.
I got a question real quick for Rob and actually Eric. Do you feel comfortable with what Waterworks is asking for? Do you feel that I don't know if this was negotiated between you and them or if it was just purely they brought in this number and you're passing it through?
We have been asking Waterworks for the past 6 months to do a lot of work that's been out of scope. In the interest of helping move the project forward and not delaying the project. And at every turn, they've been very accommodating. They've documented their out-of-scope work and have let us know when they've been doing out-of-scope work, but because they had the capacity in their contract, they continue to work forward at risk, if you will.
So you feel comfortable supporting the number that they're bringing?
I spent a lot of time, myself and others on staff, spent a lot of time going over these and reviewing these,
right.
Not just taking them and reviewing them and throwing them back over to the team over there, but we've had numerous discussions with them to understand exactly why these costs are what they are, and I do believe that they're fair and is what is needed for them to get the job done.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Because actually, I don't know if people always realize a professional contract, that's not the low bidder, like it is when you're doing construction work, and it's the fact you negotiate a fee with them. And in this particular case, that's what happened. Same with Corolla, you know. So from that standpoint, I'm going to say I have to defer to you because I'm looking through a porthole, seriously. And, you don't get to see the whole picture when you sit up here, but, it just caught my eye. I usually don't see 50% change orders on the original contract. In any case, thank you very much.
So I just have one thing to add, and we'll take your comments regarding the potholing to heart. It is a time and materials not to exceed contract, and we'll be reviewing very carefully their potholing plan to make sure that we're not overdoing what we need to do with the project.
Seriously, Rob, when I first read it, I thought maybe the IPR is going off to the other side of the freeway, and so they had to do additional potholing, and when you said, no, it's following the same corridor, I don't know why. For that, it just kind of perked up my brain a little.
Jesse?
If I can add a comment, just kind of so overall, I get a sense that this is a well-managed project, that it's on relatively on budget, it's going relatively smoothly. So I want to offer that piece of my opinion. So this is a citizens advisory committee, so as a citizen, I'm advising that we all got our first big bill. So, we're going to have to be mindful of the 10,360 people, the rest of the 10,300 of us that just got that large bill and are going to be looking at words like amendment with some impunity. So I agree. I'm not an accountant, so I don't want to pretend that I know that that's not a generally accepted accounting term, but it didn't sit well with me either. But now that I get the full scope, I do see that we have very competent professionals managing this project, and I'm very comfortable moving forward. Just I would encourage us to continue to monitor our language. So,
one other thing too is, and my apologies if I haven't been following this closely, is in regards to the Bureau of Reclamation grant. And where we are with that, the application.
A couple of things there, and I can't remember where we, it might have been at council where we addressed this previously. We were planning to be able to submit an application for the round of funding for last year. The Title 16 program changed their requirements a bit. And we had a crosswalk document, or essentially a document that they require a project report to be able to apply. We had another document, the recycled water management plan, that was previously done, we were using as a surrogate for their project report. And we had a crosswalk document. Well, the Bureau had a problem with that document that had been developed back in late 2017, 2018. So there's a little bit of a back and forth going on between us and the Bureau to get that finalized. Well, in that process, they released the call for applications, and they changed the rules this time. We needed to have an approved crosswalk document before that happened, not before we submitted an application. So we kind of, in a sense, we missed the deadline for last year, but we are working on a revised project report. That's within our scope of work, that's within our existing budget that's being done, and it's going to be submitted for next year.
And I was just thinking that you're going to be writing that recycle feasibility or whatever it's called, so that would be part of it. That's part of some of your work that you're going to be doing as part of this amendment.
The plan is to, and you read my mind there, so the plan is to... we have a recycled water feasibility study, and all of these things have slightly different names, so that's why I trip up on it a little bit. The report that was developed back in 2017 is essentially the basis for this recycled water management plan that we need to hand to the Coastal Commission, and it's also the basis of this project report that we need to hand to Title 16. And so I'm having the same person prepare both of those documents. So those are going to be done together. Because they're slightly different, but they're similar, but they are different. But they're both drawing on a lot of the findings from the feasibility studies at the Surface Estate.
And they'll be more up to date and that should make them happy. And
Each has their own little nuances. I think really what the Coastal Commission is looking for with this recycled water management plan is, in discussing with them, we understand the analysis that was done in your recycled water feasibility study. We want to know the steps that you're taking to go from that study to get to full implementation of the project. So what are the things that we're doing on the hydrogeo side and everything else to be able to put these injection wells in the ground? Title 16 is a little bit different in that they don't really care about recycled water or wastewater treatment. They care about water supply. And so that's the slant of that report, or that project report, is essentially, you know, we are doing this project and we are looking for a grant because we are creating a new potable water supply for the city and diversifying the city's existing water supply. So, you know, the same basis, but each one has their own bent to it to answer the questions of the specific audience.
Okay, with that, my final comment would be echoing kind of on what everyone else says, is that as a citizen, this is our money. We're paying, we're footing the bill. So as this goes before the city council, I would hope that they would start negotiating on behalf of those people that are paying for this, look at ways of maybe keeping those costs down, not doubling up on tasks, maybe finding other ways to, say, doing the potholing. I don't know if you guys have a vac truck that you can go out there and do it yourself. It'd be a lot cheaper. But there's got to be other ways of bringing these expenses before we've even started construction. The thing is, we've got these potential change orders. We have these amendments. All these costs today, which is in the millions, and we haven't turned the ground yet. So think of the ratepayers, please. That's all. With that, I guess we're adjourning. There's nothing else on the agenda. So thank you very much for coming. Mm-hmm.